This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, good evening, and let's look at our next piece of Gemara. So the piece we're selecting from the last week's learning of the Daf Yomi. Is there anybody here who's actually learning the Daf Yomi? Anybody here that?
You are.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Yes, yes. Are you enjoying it? Good. The piece we're doing is on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. Again, what I'm trying to do is to get the information out to you in time as to what Gemara will be doing so that you can bring bring Sforim with you, or at least bring further stats or whatever. Before we do that, I want to put to you a question which we'll answer at the end of the shiur. We have a principle of shlichus. What does shlichus mean? Basically, you can appoint a proxy to do certain things for you. You can even appoint a proxy to do a mitzvah for you. There are many, many mitzvahs that you can do by means of a shliach. Somebody else can do the mitzvah for you. What happens if you appoint a non-Jew to do something for you? Is there any level of shlichut? So if it's a mitzvah, that might not work. But are there any other areas of shlichut? So there are two views as to whether there is shlichus la'akum or not. And meaning, can a non-Jew perform an act of proxy on behalf of a Jew? And there is a view in the Gemara that the chumra there is. That means, if somebody appointed a non-Jewish shliach to do an action, then for all serious consequences of the action, the chumra, where there's a serious consequence of that action, we'll consider the action as performed, as valid. That being the case, the question is asked, if I ask a goy to do something for me on Shabbos, what should be the situation then? So sometimes we say, Ein shliach l'dvar avera. That means if I ask you to do an avera for me, who gets punished? Me or the shliach?
You. The person sending.
No. Ein shliach l'dvar avera means shlichus doesn't work with avera. If it's an avera, we say, divrei harav, divrei hatam, divrei mishoimin. The shliach is a conscious human being. And the fact that I say, go and do something for me on Shabbos, doesn't entitle you to say, you shouldn't listen. Hashem says no. That's the basis on which we would discredit the claims of the Nuremberg, what are they called? The defendants at Nuremberg. Now, we were told we were under orders. Yeah, but you're under orders from God as well. So who do you take orders from? You take orders from your most senior commander. And our most senior commander is Hashem. So if I do something, I can't say I'm doing it for so-and-so. I should be able to say no, and therefore I'm accountable for my own actions, even if I've been instructed by somebody else. I remain accountable for my own actions. That's the principle of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. But if I ask a goy to do something for me on Shabbos, for him it's not an avera. So he doesn't have to defend himself. So then if there's no principle of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, then there should be shlichus. At least as far as chumra is concerned. And therefore, so what should be the situation then if I tell a non-Jew to do something for me? That should be as if I'm doing it myself. It should be like shlichus. Now, we're not allowed to tell non-Jews to do things for us, but it's not as if we're doing it ourselves. There are other reasons why we can't tell a non-Jew to do things for us. But if I tell a non-Jew to switch on a light for me on Shabbos, it's not as if I switched on the light. It's also, we're not allowed to do that except under certain circumstances. But it's not as if I switched on the light. So it isn't working as shlichus. Why not? So that's one of the questions we're going to explore tonight. Why, when I tell a non-Jew to do a melacha for me on Shabbos, why is it not considered as if I did the melacha? At the end of the day, is what we're going to look at. Now let's have a look at this little piece of Gemara in the middle of Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis. Im haya kohen gadol zakeinu istanis. This is 2, 4, 6. Yeah. Lamed Daled Amud Beis. Okay. 34b. Lamed Daled Amud Beis. About 6 lines from the top of the page, 7 lines, we quote a piece from the Mishnah, Im Hayah Kohen Gadol Zakein or Istanis. Another question I want to ask, is it easier for you if I pronounce in Ashkenazis or in Sfaradit? So you don't always have to do what you always used to do, you can change.
What are you comfortable with?
I'm easy, I'm equally comfortable in both. When I'm in Israel I use Sfaradit, when I'm out
in
Israel I use
Sfaradit.
In the Mizrahi Shul it's Sfaradit. So I should respect the place where I'm in and it should be in Sfaradit. So, if I can't respect the place I'm in, I shouldn't be giving a shiur here. Im haya kohen gadol or istanis, Kohen Gadol Zakeinu Istanis. If the Kohen Gadol is old, he's not firm, or he is an Istanis, he's very delicate, then they used to warm the water for him, the mikveh water. He used to have to dip into the mikveh many times on Yom Kippur, and it could be pretty cold. And he's working outside all the time, and he's changing clothes backwards, and they didn't want him to get sick. So if he was old or an Istanis, then well, I suppose in Israeli yeshivas they would say, oh, if he comes from Chutz La'aretz. If he's not an Israeli, then they would warm the water up for him. It's not tough enough. And that's what they used to do. How did they do it? Tanya, I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda explained, Ashashiyot shel bazel hayu mechamin. They used to take splinters of steel, of metal, iron, and heat them up in a furnace, Merev Yom HaKippurim, before Yom Kippur, Umatilin latoch tzoynein kedei shetafig tzinatan. And then they would throw it into the cold mikveh, and the hot metal in the cold mikveh would take the chill off the water, and the water wouldn't be quite as cold. Ask the Gemara, v'halom tzaref. That's an isur d'oraisa on Shabbos, which is called, what's the English term for that, when you harden, tempering iron metal. Taking metal, you're hardening it by that process, is that right? Not softening it. If you heat it up, you're hardening the metal, and that's an isur d'oraisa. It's one of the melachos. Omer Rav Bivi, shelo higia letziruf. Rav Bivi says you don't let it get to the temperature of tempering. You just take it out of the fire before it gets to that temperature. We're not going to deal with Rav Bivi's answer. Abaya ama, afilu temak shehigia letziruf. Even if they did heat it up to the temperature that would temper the steel and would normally be considered an isur d'oraisa, a Torah prohibition on Shabbos. Nevertheless, they're allowed to do it under those circumstances because it's a davar she'ein mitkaven, mutar, because it's not intended for that purpose and therefore it's permitted. So since the purpose is not to temper the steel, the purpose is to heat the water, that's called a davar she'ein mitkaven and it's mutar. That's the part we're going to be concerned with. And a little bit further too. Umi amar abaya hachi. Does Abaya really hold that davar she'en mitkaven is mutar? That something which is not deliberate, something which is where you don't intend that particular outcome, that you're allowed to do that on Shabbos? Is that what Abaya holds? V'hatanya, did we not learn in a brisa? Besar orlato afilu b'makom sheyesh sham baheret yakut, divrei Rabbi Yoshaya. There is a din that if there is a particular type of nega, a particular type of imperfection on the skin, which could be a symptom of a state of tumah, which has to be checked by the kohen, you can't just cut that skin off and therefore get rid of the tzaraat. That doesn't do the job. You're not allowed to do that. What happens if the tzaraat is on a person? It might be an infant, it might be an adult who hasn't had a brit before, is on the foreskin of a male, and the moel cuts it off, thereby performing the mitzvah of brit milah, but at the same time cutting off a nega, which is an isur. What then? So Rabbi Yoshaya says no problem. V'havinan ba, and the Gemara discusses, it talks about it. Kra lamali, And where does Rabbi Yoshiah learn that from? From Basar Orlato. You've got to cut off the flesh of his orla, of his foreskin. So this kind of a double wording there, it doesn't just say you cut his orla, you cut his foreskin, it's the flesh of the foreskin, to imply even if there's a baheret there, even if there is that type of nega there, you may cut. Vahavinanban, we discussed there, kra lamali. Why do you need a posuk? Why do you need a verse to tell me that you're allowed to do that? V'amar Abaya, and Abaya answered and said, L'Rabbi Yehuda, d'omar dova she'en mitkaven osu. The reason you need the verse is to teach you that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that dova she'en mitkaven, if you don't have intention for that specific outcome, it is still osu. In this case, it's permitted. So the Gemara brings a proof from there that Abaya holds that davar she'en mitkaven is osur. Again, we have a machlokes in the Mishnah already. Davar she'en mitkaven. If one does an act on Shabbos where the intention is not the outcome of the issur, whether that's mutar or osur, whether that's permitted or it's not permitted. So one of the examples of that is a person. You're not allowed to make a furrow. You're not allowed to dig a furrow on Shabbos. So the classic example of the Gemara is a person moves a piece of furniture across a sand floor. And the legs of the furniture create a ditch. So he's making a ditch, he's digging out a ditch. That's not also, if you hold Dovah Shirim is covered, is mutter, because that's a Dovah Shirim. Your intention is not to dig a ditch. Your intention is to move a table. The fact that the ditch was dug is not your intention, and therefore it's mutter according to some. According to Rabbi Yehuda, also. Even that is also. And that's why we need a verse, says Abaye, to teach us there's a special gzeres hakosu, there's a special dispensation given by the Torah itself in the case of the Bris Milah, that if by cutting the foreskin you're also removing a baheret, you're allowed to do that. That's why you need a verse. That's the piece of Gemara that we need. Then the Gemara answers, so the Gemara makes a distinction and says, according to Abaya, you're right, Abaya holds like Rabbi Yehuda that the davar she'enem et kaven is asur, you're not allowed to do it. But that's for all other cases in the Torah except this case. And tziruf, the tempering in this particular circumstance is a drabonin, and therefore it follows different rules. That's what the Gemara wants to say. The first thing we're going to look into is a question of the Rashbo. Rashbo's question is, let's understand the difference between two ideas in Hilchos Shabbos. The one idea is, our whole shiur will revolve around these two ideas. The one idea is a davar she'eino mitkaven, the idea we've just learned about, where your intention is not to do the isur, but the isur gets done. You're schlepping the furniture, and a ditch is created, but that wasn't your intention. That's a davar she'eino mitkaven. The other idea in Hilchos Shabbos is melocha she'eino tzricha l'gufo. You do the melocha, but you don't need the outcome. You're not doing it for the purpose of the outcome. There is kavona. You're doing it with intent, but not with need for the outcome. So what would be a case of that? So let us say, for example, that digging the ditch was inevitable. The soft stand, the table's very, very heavy. There's no question you're going to dig the ditch. So you can't say it's a davar she'eino mitkaven really, because you know you're digging the ditch. It's a psik resha, we call that. But it's still a davar she'eino, it's still a melocha she'eino tzricha l'gufo. You say, but I don't need a ditch. In fact, I don't want a ditch. I just want the table moved. If there was a way to move the table without making a ditch, that would be better. That's a melocha she'eino tzricha l'gufo, where you don't need the outcome. Okay, two different concepts. A melacha where you didn't intend the action, and a melacha where you don't need the outcome. Which one is this more like? Asks the Rashba. The case of cutting the foreskin and there's a baheret there. Which one would you think that's more like? Yes, but that's not the issue. What's the issue? The Baheret, you're not interested in cutting the Baheret there or not, it's irrelevant. So really, says the Rashba, this is a melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufo, this is not a davar she'eino mitkaven. You are mitkaven, there's full intent. You know exactly what you're doing. You'd better know exactly what you do. You're cutting, and you're cutting in a particular place, and you know very well you're cutting the baheret off. That's not a davar she'eino mitkaven. That's full kavona. That's full intent. If it's anything, it's a melacha she'eino tzricha legufa. Why doesn't the Gemara say that? Why is the Gemara inaccurate in its language? Is what the Rashba asks. And he suggested quick answers to that. Yeah, so you're asking why don't we just say that it's an asay doche lo tase, and that's also a good question. I know the answer offhand to that. Why don't we just say it's an asay doche lo tase, the same as you can do on Shabbos, so you can do this as well.
Couldn't we raise a question nechle lo nechle?
No, but we're not even going into psikresh as to whether it's a psikresh or not. All we're saying is, what is this classified as? Does this follow the rules of a davar she'eino mitkaven? Because they're different rules. A davar she'eino mitkaven has one set of rules, and a melacha she'eino tzricha legufa has a different set of rules. And the Gemara treats this as a davar she'eino mitkaven, whereas the Rashba says it should be a melacha she'eino tzricha legufa, is what it really should be. And what would be that? Why should they be distinct? They're not. We find them in other places too. But tell me why you. But here, for example, is one of the cases. This is not Hilchos Shabbos. And we're talking about a davar she'eino mitkaven, yeah? Anything else there? Interesting. So you're probing something, which we're going to come to. Is it possible that melacha she'eino tzricha legufo is an idea only in Hilchos Shabbos? Davar she'eino mitkaven might be a universal principle, but maybe a melacha she'eino tzricha legufo is only for Hilchos Shabbos? Because melacha, the word melacha, is a word that's used specifically for Shabbos, and therefore maybe it's only Hilchos Shabbos.
Is the baheret proper, the one that does the removing, or the fact that it's removed?
It would seem to be the one that does the removing. It would be the isur, lo yokutz, that you're not allowed to cut it off. There are a number of different answers that are given. The Ritvo gives two answers. The one answer the Ritvo gives is that these are actually two actions, and you've got to view them separately. The one action is the removal of the Baheret, and the other is the Brit Milah. Because he says the Baheret is only on the surface of the skin. So you remove the Baheret before you finish the Brit. And therefore you've got to break that into two different actions. And on the portion of the action which is the removal of the baheret, on that part, it is a davar she'eino mitkaven, because you have no intention to remove the baheret. If it was two actions that occurred simultaneously, then you could say it's not a davar she'eino mitkaven, it's a melacha she'eino tzricha legufa. The Ritvo wants to go down that route, but what I'm interested in is the Ritvo's second answer, because it comes close to what Chaim was saying. The Ritvo says, in all cases outside of Shabbos, a melacha she'eino tzricha legufo is called a davar she'eino mitkaven, is what he says. That the distinction is unique to Shabbos. Not that the one doesn't apply, but in all other cases there is no distinction. Davar she'eino mitkaven and melacha she'eino tzricha legufo are the same concept everywhere else in Torah, is what he wants to say. And he brings a proof for that from a case, and there are different girsas in the Gemara, but according to the Ritvo's girsa in Sanhedrin, a child who might be a doctor, and he lets the blood of his father. They used to use bloodletting as a way of curing infection in those days. And maybe the same would apply of doing an operation today. There's an issue, you're not allowed to cause a wound to a parent. So what happens if he's doing it for the purpose of healing? What is that? Is that a melacha she'eino tzricha legufo? So the isur is wounding the parent. Is that a davar she'eino mitkaven, or is it a melacha she'eino tzricha legufo? What is that? Leaving aside the Ritvo's chiddush, just ordinarily, why do you say it's a melacha she'eino tzricha legufo?
you don't want the blood.
Because yes, the action you're conscious of. You're just cutting into the parent's flesh. You know you're doing that. You're piercing the parent's flesh. You're drawing blood. It's not a dover shein and miskaven. There's good kavana. It's hamelocha shein atzlicha legufo. You don't need the outcome. You don't want the blood. You don't want the pain. You want the curing. So it's hamelocha shein atzlicha legufo, but the Gemara calls it a dover shein and miskaven. Says the Ritva. So you see, outside of Hilchos Shabbos, we've got two cases already. We've got the case of the son letting the blood of the father, and we've got the case of Tziruf here in the Beis HaMikdash, heating up the water using a piece of steel, of heated steel. Are both cases which technically are Loch HaShein HaTzich HaLegufo, but the Gemara calls it Dov HaShein HaMiskav. Right? That's the... Sorry?
It's most important.
Sorry, there you're right. I'm talking about the case of Orla and Baheres. Sorry, yeah, there you're right. But in the case of Orla and Baheres, it's a case which is not on Shabbos. It's a dover shein, it's a melacha shein atzlicha legufo, but the Gemara calls it a dover shein a miskaven. What we're going to look at is why would they be treated as synonymous in cases outside of Shabbos? And only in Shabbos do we create the distinction of a Dovah Shein HaMiskaven and a Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo. Any suggestions?
The right thing, they treated it as opposite, because Dovah Shein HaMiskaven is something you didn't have Kavon, and you're saying Meloch HaShein HaLeGufo, you had Kavon, just
right, in the outcome. So the case of letting the father's blood, what is that?
Yes.
Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo, but the Gemara calls it Dovah Shein HaMiskaven. So you're saying it's illogical, you're right. So you're saying that's it's as illogical as the case of the Baharit and the other. So we have two cases where, based on our current understanding of things, it should be called. That really is the Rashbol's question. Clearly we're missing something, because based on all our knowledge, this should not be called a Dovah Shein HaMiskaven, it should be called a Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo. That's the beauty of Gemara, you see. If you don't learn like we learn Gemara, if we would have a more secular approach, we would simply say, the Tana erred. Made a mistake. The Amora made a mistake, and we would carry on, and we would correct it. And then we would say, sorry, we would just correct the version. And we miss the Torah that way. Because the way we have Chiddush, the way we have understanding, is when you stop on something that looks unusual, and you say, based on all my knowledge to date, this looks odd. Therefore, what do I have to do? Learn something I didn't know before. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. If you're willing so quickly to distort and to change and to say, you know, this, then you don't learn. Then you don't grow. You only are able to grow when you start with the assumption that what is before you is correct. And if you're not understanding it, then you're missing some knowledge. That way you go out and you find the knowledge. That's why one of the most important middos for learning is humility. One of the, because with arrogance, you say, mistake, and you carry on. Humility says, can't be. I'm the one who's mistaken. So I'm missing a piece of knowledge. And then you have some sleepless nights until you figure it out. And that way you can grow, and that way you can do it. That's what Limud Torah is. That's the importance of learning Torah. So the Rashbo is saying, based on our body of knowledge, this should not be called a Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo, a Dov HaShein HaMiskaven. This should be called a Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo. So the question is not on the Gemara, the question is on me. I'm missing something in my body of knowledge. Says the Ritva, you know what? I'll prove you're right, you're missing something in your body of knowledge, because I'll give you another case of the son trying to let the blood of the father. Another case that should be a Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo and is called Dov HaShein HaMiskaven. So there is something wrong in your body of knowledge. What are you missing? You're missing the fact that the distinction only applies for Shabbos. That's all the Ritva says. Now we're going to say, but there's still something missing in our body of knowledge. The Ritva seems to understand why. We don't know why. We can't make sense of that. It still doesn't seem logical. Dov HaShein HaMiskaven and Meloch HaShein HaTzichel LeGufo clearly state what they are. They're different. And why are they lumped together in those two cases, in the case of the Baharit and the case of the son letting the blood of the father? That is the issue. And therefore?
Shabbos is special because what you're doing at the particular act gives
beautiful,
the key to Shabbos because of your relationship to that act, whether it's the way that Shabbos
Okay, so just slowly, just you're touching on something very important. You're saying, well, the only thing I can find in my body of knowledge, you say, Stan, is that what's unique about Shabbos, melochas, and that's why it's called a melocha, because a melocha implies a work of art. A melocha implies a skilled job. Melocha doesn't mean labor. When people talk about, it's not turning on a light, isn't labor, why aren't you allowed to do it on Shabbos? Melocha doesn't mean labor. Melocha means a work of art. Turning on a light is a work of art. Creating light. And that's what a melocha is. A melocha machshevis. And part of that, part of a work of art, is the intent of the artist. There's no art if somebody comes and throws a paint at a canvas and it sticks all over the place. That's not art. Might be interesting, but it's not art. What makes it art is the intent of the artist. So in every melocha, there has to be melocha machshevis. There needs to be artistic intent, let's call it. The intent of the artist, of the person who does it. So there's something already about Shabbos which is different. Now you need to reason further and say, okay, in what way does that link into the issue of the ritual? Okay. Well, so that all that is important. What we've got to say is that on Shabbos, this the Sfas Emes explains the following. Sfas Emes says on Shabbos, what's forbidden is the process, not the outcome. And part of the process is machshevis, but there has to be conscious intent to perform the process. It's not about the outcome. It's the melocha that is prohibited. It's not having the light on. That's why we can use time switches. You can have a light on. You can have the light turn on and off 100 times. You just can't turn the light on and off. It's the activity which is also on Shabbos. In all other cases, it's the outcome. It's not the activity which is prohibited. It's the outcome achieved through the action. Quite a big chiddush of the Sfas Emes. But in the other cases of the Torah, it's the outcome. So for example, what would happen, can you think of cases where the outcome, where you can achieve outcome without the action and it's not also outside of Shabbos? Kilayim is a little different. I think the Sfas Emes is treading quite thin, because if you think of it, what would be the case if you are injected intravenously with tray food? Is that permitted or isn't it? No, but what are you allowed to? What happens if you're injected with tray food? Is that allowed or isn't allowed? It's allowed. It's not achila. So there you've got outcome. Because there's no hanoah, but that means there's no ma'is achila. It's not called achila. So you've got to say there, but there too you've got to say that the eating is not it's not even an outcome of eating. You might have the same nutritional effect, but that's not what the issue is. Isn't even the outcome of eating. It's quite a narrow boundary line that he walks when he says that at the end of the day, it's the reason that the Torah forbids is because it doesn't want, not because it doesn't want certain activities, but it doesn't want certain outcomes. So, what would happen if you didn't have kavona for that outcome? You had kavona for the action, but not for the outcome. Then in other Yisurim, what is that? So you have kavana to cut into the father's flesh, but you don't have kavana for the outcome, which is causing your father pain. That's not what you want. So then what does that create? In other words, what I'm asking you is, in the situation where you had kavana, you had intention for the cut, but not for the bleeding, or not for the pain, is that called kavana or isn't it called kavana? So let's look at two cases. Let's look at a Shabbos case and let's look at a Because Shabbos, we've got the same story. You're not allowed to wound yourself on Shabbos either. So are you allowed to cut yourself to let blood on Shabbos? No, I'm not talking about pikuach nefesh or anything. Just you want to feel a little better. So you want to cut yourself. So why the difference? Why the difference? So in the case of Shabbos, what is your intention to cut? Yes, your intention is to cut. So therefore, is it a melacha machsheves? Melachas machsheves? It is. There's full intent. In the case of the son and the father, is your intention to cut?
Yes.
Is there anything wrong with cutting?
Yes.
No,
there's only wrong with outcome. Causing pain and letting blood. The action is not the problem. On Shabbos, the action is the problem. So the focal point of intention to determine whether it's a valid action or not is on the action. Did you intend the action? For the rest of the Torah, in all other cases, the focal point of intention is on the outcome. Even though you intended the action, if you didn't intend the outcome, it's not called a melacha, it's not called an issur.
The ultimate outcome is benefit.
That's why it's allowed. Because your intention was not to cause pain. Your intention was to cut. And therefore, if it was Shabbos, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. Because cutting is what's not allowed on Shabbos. The process that leads to the outcome is what's not allowed on Shabbos. Whereas on other Yisurim, it's the outcome, not the process that leads to the outcome. So let's go through the two cases. The one is the case of the son cutting the father. So there again, we've said the intention is, so it's a melacha she'en atzicha l'gufa, but if it's a melacha she'en atzicha l'gufa, then it's a dover she'en mitkavein, is what he explains. The Sfas Emes. Outside of Shabbos, if it's a dover she'en atzicha l'gufa, if you don't need the outcome, then your intention was not on the prohibition, because the outcome is the prohibition. So it's a dover she'en mitkavein, and that's what the ritvo means. And then what about the case of the baheret and the that's why it's allowed, because when the Torah says you may not wound your father, what's it talking about? Not healing. It's talking about wounding. But if you don't intend to wound the father, then you don't intend to do anything wrong. Your intention is not in wrongdoing. Whereas if it were Shabbos, your intention is to cut, and cutting is wrongdoing. So your attention then attaches to the wrong part. So if you look at the thing as having process and outcome, action and result. Where does the issur reside? On Shabbos it resides in action. In other issurim it resides in results. Where does your intention reside? So that depends. If you're talking about cutting your father to let blood, is your intention on action or on result? No, your negative intention. In other words, you're right. Your intention is on not the result of the issur. The result of the issur is not healing. The result of the issue is causing pain. So the action is cutting. The prohibited outcome is pain. Right? A bleeding wound. The son who's the doctor, who's the physician, where is his intention? On the action or on the result? No, the result is causing pain. Let's start again. The Torah says, do not cause your father a bleeding wound. There is an action that leads to that. That's called cutting flesh. There is an outcome which is called a bleeding wound. A painful bleeding wound. Did the son, the physician, have intention for the outcome? Did he intend to create a painful bleeding wound for his father? No. He had no intention on the outcome. On the outcome of the Torah's prohibition. Did he have intention on the action? Yes. Is the action prohibited? No, that's the important part of this passage. The action is not prohibited, the outcome. So if he didn't have intention on the outcome, but on the action, then he didn't have intention. And it's called the Dava She'ena Mitkavein. If it were Shabbos, where is his intention? Still, on the cat. Is his intention on the outcome? No. Where is the issue? On the action. Therefore, it's not a dover she'ena mitkavein. It's a melacha she'ena atzicha l'gufa. That's how the Sfas Emes explains the ritva. Let's look at the case of the baheres and the mila. So the mohel, is his intention to cut?
Yes.
What is the issur? This is not shut. The issur is baheres removal. So, was his intention to remove the baheres? No. Therefore, it's called the dover shen miskame. You don't have to come onto melacha shen tzichelagufa. In the case of throwing the hot steel, heating the steel and to throw into the water, that's a Shabbos situation. So what is that? Would that be a dover shen miskavin? Would that be a melacha shen tzichelagufa? Right. Well, or you could say in that case, could it be a dover shen miskavin in that case? What, the Gemara says it isn't. That's so. Doesn't the Gemara say it's a dover shen miskavin? So why is it a dover shen miskavin? Because is his intention, so let's go through again. Is his intention on the, what is the issur? The action that hardens the steel. What is that? That's the putting it in the fire. Is he intending to do that at all? Where is his intent? His intent is not in hardening the steel. His intent is on the water. Therefore, it's a dover shen miskavin. On the process, he has no intention. He has no intention attached to the process at all. All he wants is the water to be heated. The hot and the cold. To be metarif, you need to heat it and to. Yes, that's why I'm not sure if the correct translation of tziruf is temporary. To harden, but that's the hardening, isn't it? Could also be to purify. We need to check out exactly what the translation of tziruf is. You've got to try and ask for there. Let's see what does it say for tziruf. Thanks. In another, as you look at the article before, you look at Rashi. One day they'll say, Rashi, who is that? Where do you find Rashi? That's what else he's saying. Because you need it for strengthening, they call it. Strengthening.
To strengthen and harden it.
Yeah. And he explains here that it cools down even before you put it in the cold water. And you're right. And Rashi says that it's both. It's the hardening and the placing it in the water. Hanoten bazel min ha'esh l'mayim. When you take iron from fire and put it into water, mitzarfo, which means mechazko u'makshehu. You strengthen it and you harden. You strengthen it and you harden it. Thanks. So you're right. So it's the process of tziruf is taking it all the way into the hot water. So that's all the action. And we'll say eino miskavin that in that situation, even though it's Hilchos Shabbos we're talking about, he's eino miskavin. It's not just the outcome that he doesn't want, but isn't even attached. His intention is not even attached to the process of the steel because he's not focused on the steel. He's focused on the water. You would have to say. Yeah, but there's a bit of an onus that the fact that it flew over was something unpredictable. It doesn't attach to him to the same degree, that's why it's a shogeg, because it was unpredictable. So now let's go to the question we started off asking in the beginning, and that is the question of the shaliach. So what did we say in the beginning? If we were to ask a shaliach to do something for us on Shabbos, why isn't it called shlichus? Why isn't it considered as if I did it myself? What's the reason? Therefore, in other halachas where the focus is on the outcome, if I send a shaliach to do it, it gets done. I initiated the process whereby it got done. That's complete action. But on Shabbos, the focus is on the process, and I didn't do the process. The person who actually does the process would be the one who would be chayav. In this case, it's a goy, and therefore there would be no shlichus. So that it's possible to use the Sfas Emes's explanation of the Ritvo to understand the difference between a shliach and not a shliach. What emerges from this is It tells us a whole lot about Shabbos also. It tells us about the prohibitions of Shabbos, but the things that we're prohibited from Shabbos, again, is not outcome focused. It's the way we spend our time. It's not trying to make us uncomfortable. We can set ourselves up before Shabbos to have all the comforts we want. It's not desired to restrict us. It's desired to liberate us from activity. What can you do when you're not being active? What do you do when you're not? If you're not activity, there are two things that are sometimes mutually exclusive. Sometimes one can synthesize them. There is activity, being active, and being, just being. And Shabbos is a time for being. The rest of the week is a time for being active. And in Torah, we find in Eastern methodology, they like to find being with no action. That's meditating. And in the West, they like to be active without being. And in Torah, we synthesize both. We find we meditate through action. We're very conscious and very mindful when we act. We express our deepest being in our actions. That's melacha. But not on Shabbos. Shabbos is a day of meditation. It's very interesting when you look at the requirements that the Eastern guys have got for sometimes they recommend that you take a day to meditate, a day of meditation day, they very often recommend. Full day. And when you go through what they suggest you do that day, it's Hilcha Shabbos. That's complete Hilcha Shabbos. It's take away technology, turn off the phones, cook your food and things beforehand so that you don't have to cook. It's Hilcha Shabbos. And then you realize that why Shabbos is such a gift. Shabbos is an opportunity where you set yourself up, you program yourself so there's no need for activity. So that one day in the week you can be without activity. Just be with yourself. Be with yourself. Be able to think, be able to contemplate, be able to reflect, be able to learn. Be able to do the things that you can't do when you're busy being active. What do we tend to do on Shabbos? We tend to get even more active than we are during the week. Run from one thing to another, running backwards. Shabbos is not a day for running. It's also to run. You're not even allowed to run. It's a day for being. It's a day for reflecting. And you see from what's also, and it's not the outcome that's also, it's the activity. You can have whatever outcome you want. Just don't do it. It's the doing that is the issue, not the having. Not the getting there. It's the doing that is the issue. Which also gives us a sense of what we're meant to be doing on Shabbos. Kind of thing. Shabbos is about a state of being. It's not just about getting to a certain result. It's not just about getting through Shabbos. And when one gets good at Shabbos, and it's quite sad that there isn't such a concept. Have you ever heard people say, "Are you getting better at Shabbos?" If I were to say that to you, what would you think I meant? Yeah, do you know the halacha is better? Are you being more particular? Well, that's all. That's an important part. Yeah, you're dipping the tea back into a cliche. Are you improving in Shabbos? That's how I would take it. And that's one part of it. But there's another whole part of Shabbos. You're getting better at Shabbos. You measure by the level of sadness you feel when Shabbos ends. And if you rush to say, Shabbos out yet. We make Amzor yet, right? But you're not keeping Shabbos yet. You know you're not keeping Shabbos. You keep Shabbos. There's a reason. Why do you have Besomim at the end of Shabbos? Right, yeah, to comfort the Neshama. To handle the depression. But if that becomes another ritual, and on you go, and then you have your wine, off you go, and you off to the movies. That's not called keeping Shabbos. So when people say, "Are you Shomre?" Be careful how you answer. First thing you must ask is, Shomre what? Shomrei mitzvahs, Shomrei taras ha-mishpacha, Shomrei kashrus. What Shomrei are you referring to? Shomrei Shabbos. Are you Shomrei Shabbos? Answer that question very carefully. Very carefully. I suppose an honest question, an honest answer might be, if we're on the level, I'm trying. I'm practicing. Because the truth is, we're not Shomrei Shabbos. Shomrei Shabbos would be that we mourn Shabbos as a loss at the end of every Shabbos. Because it's been such a precious time of being, of reflection, of being liberated from doing, that we're sad when it goes and we get back into the world of activity. And so we can see, even from a complex technical piece of Gemara around the Kohen and the Beis HaMikdash and Yom Kippur, Hilcha Shabbos, Bris Milah and Baharis, one can learn principles and understandings of what the Torah really requires of us on Shabbos.
Wo ist der unsere Endung?